My talk, and so I first
so here's the outline of my talk. So I first want to talk the motivation of this work, and then I want to talk about the relation between reduced space-based quantization and path integral, and apply to gravity, then I get a continuum gate-fixed path integral. And then we talk about the operator constraint quantization and path integral quantization, and we'll apply the gravity against the path integral formulation suitable for spin form structure. And in the end, I talk about master constraint quantization, the relation between master constraint quantization and path integral. We'll apply to gravity, I get the discretized path integral formula for loop of gravity. The general idea for this work is that we first formally quantize the general time relaxation environment system, then we consider gravity as a special case. So here we first come to the motivation of this work. And so what we are going to do is to consider the relation between a path integral formulation, as a path integral formulation which is consistent with canonical loop on gravity. So in this path integral formulation, we will have the canonical interpretation of the path integral amplitude, which is a physical inner product of some physical states, in the sense of either reduced space-based quantization or Dirac quantization. And also, we're going to fix the path integral measure ambiguity by using the canonical framework. Because we all know that in path integral formulation, we have ambiguity in choosing path integral measures. Normally, we should go to the canonical theory, derive this path integral measure from canonical theory, fix ambiguity. And for example, in simple system like free quantum field theory or free particle mechanics, the path integral measure is just simply a formal product of Lebesgue measure. But in general, it's not necessarily always that simple. Normally, it will have this kind of measure factor. And for example, in quantum gravity, we will have this kind of local measure factor, which is this kind of local measure factor. And it is already pointed out in the 60s by the literature and studied in the context of background dependent perturbation quantization. And so here, we will see that for general relativity, in order to consist in this canonical framework, this kind of non-covariant local measure is unavoidable. Non-covariant because there is a spatial volume element. And so then the question is, how do you
understand? What are the two of these?
Some power of space-time volume factor and some power of spatial volume.
Because it's coming from canonical theory, we assume there is a foliation of the space-time. So the question is how to understand this local measure factor in the background independent quantization. Yeah, this is what I will say. Yeah. It means that this measure is the path integral, you won't get the path integral with space-time diffeomorphism as symmetry, as local symmetry. So the space-time is not a local symmetry in quantum theory. So it's space-time diffeomorphism.
So this is
no problem because it is the price to pay coming from canonical because if you want consistent with canonical theory.
So does it mean that the canonical theory is wrong?
No, it doesn't mean canonical theory is wrong. It's the price to pay if we want to have the condition. So your assumption is you got the path integral consistent with canonical theory, then you derive it is non-covariant.
But so if you have to choose between breaking diffeo invariants, the price to pay to break diffeo invariants is very high, right?
Yes, it is very high price. Yes.
It means new degrees of freedom. It means.
I don't think it's new degree of freedom, but yes, it's high price, I think. But it really display all the gate transform, all the because in the gate transformation generated by the constraints is local symmetry from canonical theory. That symmetry is fully implemented. So,
which symmetries?
The gate transformation generated by the constraints. It is also the classical local symmetry of the action, and which is only when equation of motion is imposed, it is diffeomorphism. So I will come to this point in the boring slide.
We have some argument for how you can regain the reparametrization invariance.
We didn't break the reparametrization invariance.
Oh, well, which one are you breaking?
Yeah, the theory is still under reparametrization. It's still invariant. I mean, under if you your reparametrization is keep the foliation invariant. The it is still invariant.
So what symmetry are you breaking?
Space-time diffeomorphism, non-spatial diffeomorphism.
Space-time, so it's reparametrization, right?
Yes, but it's non-spatial diffeomorphisms. But if your reparametrization is generated by the canonical constraint, then it is still invariant. But your the problem is the reparametrization generated by the constraint is not space-time diffeomorphism. Okay.
Yeah, so can you just refresh my memory? So in perturbative quantum gravity, I mean, there were these papers of Fatkin and Filipowski, and they argued that these terms should be in the measures. I mean, you can see those papers were in the early 70s. Mm-hmm. But when people really developed, and later when people really developed the perturbative mm-hmm. quantum field theory and the perturbative expansion of the path integral, there were no such factors.
Yes, they won't. Right. In perturbative quantization, you don't need to worry about it because there is this factor. This matter of fact, they only contribute to loop order, which is divergent part of the loop order. And to make sense this path integral measure, you need a certain regularization scheme. And in those some of the regularization scheme, this matter factor just disappear. For example, dimensional regularization. Right. And in some regularization schemes, this factor cancels the divergence from the action. So in the end, you always don't need to worry about the matter factor in background-dependent perturbative quantization. Right. So it is from what I know from the literature. Okay, so let's then come to the main part. So first I talk about the relation between reduced space-based quantization and path integral. Here we're going to perform the reduced space-based quantization and write down the physical inner product for the physical states. And we derive a path integral expression for this physical inner product. So here I briefly review the relational framework in doing reduced space-based quantization. So as we start with the general covariant regular system, this general covariance means that the total Hamiltonian of the system is a linear combination of the first class constraints. Regular means if there is some second class constraints, the Dirac matrix is constant rank on full phase space. And suppose we in the phase space, we have these canonical coordinates, we pick out a certain number of canonical coordinates as our clock variable, which is denoted by Ti, which equivalent in the sense that we are choosing some gauge fixing conditions like this kind of gauge fixing conditions. And correspondingly, we abelianize the first class constraint by solving the momentum Pi conjugate to the clock variables. And it always can be done, which is guaranteed by the abelianization theorem. It always can be done locally, at least. And then we define the Dirac observable relationally by this framework. And this formula actually defines a weak Poisson homomorphism from the Poisson algebra of the functions on the gauge fixed constraint surface with Dirac brackets to the Poisson algebra of Dirac observables. On this side, it is a function on the, because the gauge fixed constraint surface is locally isomorphic to the true reduced space space of the system. And so on this side, it's the Poisson algebra of the functions on the reduced space space. And on this side is the Poisson algebra of Dirac observables, which means that the Dirac observables can be the coordinates on the reduced space space. And in particular, we get the canonical coordinates on the reduced space base construct from the Dirac observable and satisfy these standard commutation relations. And on the other hand, we also got the physical Hamiltonians from these abelianized constraints by replacing the PAQA to be Dirac observable correspondingly. And it turns out it's generating the multi-finger evolution of the Dirac observable by this Poisson bracket. And also the algebra of physical Hamiltonians forms a commutative algebra. And we all see that all this framework, we define the Dirac observable. Okay.
And just to be precise, the last line, weakly commutative means that the Poisson brackets are proportional to linear combinations of the constraints, where the coefficients can also be phase space brackets.
Yeah, right.
Business class.
Right. So here, because all this framework, we define the Dirac observable relationally which depend on the choice of clock variables. And also we define the spatial Hamiltonian by the abelianization of the constraints, which is also dependent on the choice of clock variables. And which in equivalent to the sense that we depend on the gauge fixing conditions. So it is for general covariant system, and for general relativity, which is a special case of the general covariant system. So we see that a preferred algebra of observables and the preferred dynamics is defined from the gauge fixing conditions, which is in contrast to the gauge invariant approach of Yang-Mills theory.
I have a question. What is the precise statement of the abelianization theorem?
Okay, abelianization theorem is that for given any first-class constraint, and you can always abelianize locally in the form. Yeah, locally. Yes, locally. So.
And is that an issue that
yes, there is. Yes, it's in general it's not valid globally. For example, so I will also come back to this point. And so then we come to the quantization. So I generate the quantum algebra of observables by the conjugate variables with the canonical commutation relations. And also we choose a representation for this quantum algebra. And for example, we choose the simplest case, which is L2 space over the space of Q. And we assume that the quantum dynamics exist and is anomaly free, which means that the physical Hamiltonians are self-adjoint operators, and the physical Hamiltonian forms a commutative algebra. And then we define the multi-finger evolution operator, like this, which is the product of this Dyson expansion. And then here we have the representation of Hilbert space. It is already physical Hilbert space because all the constraints already have been solved classically. It's constructed from Dirac observables, gauge invariant Dirac observables. And also, we pick out two Heisenberg states in the physical Hilbert space. We write down the physical inner product, and we enter in the resolution of identities into this physical inner product, which is a standard skeletonization procedure for deriving path integral. And then we have the result, which is the path integral expression for this physical inner product. And here is a path integral with standard neural measure on the phase space in terms of phase space variables. And here's the delta function of constraint and delta function of gauge fixing conditions. And exponential kinetic terms and boundary physical states. And it turns out that this path integral formula is equivalent to the standard Fadier-Popov path integral, which is here is the Lubov measure in terms of general coordinates on phase space, and here's the standard Fadier-Popov term. And it is Fadier-Popov determinant and delta function of all the first class constraints. It is the first class constraint before abelianization, and it is for general gauge fixing conditions. And here, in case we have second class constraints, there should be delta function of second class constraint, and here also the determinant of Dirac matrix. And here is the boundary physical state. And this path integral is equivalent to the true phase space path integral. True phase space Liouville path integral, which is suggested in the literature to be a starting point to do path integral quantization in for general constraint system. Because on the reduced phase space, there's no constraint anymore. What we are doing is a simple unconstrained system, so we just apply the Feynman principle to write down the path integral partition function. So here we show that using relational framework, construct Dirac observables, and canonical quantization, we arrive at the same path integral formula.
I don't really understand, because I think of the analytical statement in finite dimension, then let's say we have a, you know, I suppose I have some gauge symmetry which is over that. So so in the first formulation we take into account the orbits. Mm-hmm. Then what you would do is that you would just say, okay, there's the, you know, integral over the gauge in subspace, and then the volume of the orbits that arrive. Now, if the volume of the orbits do not change over slice, then clearly it's the same thing as factoring out the volume of the orbit,
right,
and getting out. But if the volume of the orbit is kind of field dependent and change, then it does not reduce to the even for finite dimensional system. So there's an extra assumption that you're making that that is related to this, the fact that abelianization is a constant. In general, you cannot factor out, you see what I mean?
Because we abelianize the system and our gauge fixing condition is just as simple like this.
Yeah.
So it don't have.
But as you're saying, it's only a local theory.
Yes, it's
so
all
general,
in general, of course.
Even let's say for finite dimensional system, you can say
yes.
Know, four vectors and you
can
how slow.
Right.
And then you can see that the volume of the orbits depend on the phase space, the true phase space.
Right.
And even in that case, you cannot, you know, the original integral is not equal to the one where you completely factor out the orbit.
Yes, but there is actually, I will talk later, that there is a way to really factor out this delta function determining out.
Because of abelianization.
Yes, because of abelianization.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yes, in general, no. But here, later on I will answer the local locality for this abelianization, for your question about the local quantization things. And,
so you agree that when abelianization is not true, it's not true that the two integrals coincide.
You mean these two?
No, when abelianization is not true, it's not true that the first computation is equal to the last computation.
This one?
Yes.
Yes, in general, on the full basis, it's not true. On the full sense, it's not true. It's only locally.
The integral is global.
Okay, so. Okay, well, maybe we discuss later about this. So here we apply the partition function into the case of gravity, and we apply the host action formalism or Plibanski host formalism to the canonical integral, and we can recover the covariant form of the path integral, and so we get these two path integrals. And here is some gate fixing conditions here, and here note that to write down this path integral, and we should make a choice of sectors of simplicity constraint. Here we write this and to choose both of the 2 plus and 2 minus sector of the simplicity constraint. So I write the path integral formula like this. But of course, we can also choose only one sector of the constraint solutions to write another path integral. But we will show, for here, of course, it is a choice ambiguity. But I will show later on that you also have a simpler path integral formula for calculation. The only choice is both of the sectors. And so here we can also see the local measure appears. And so which means that, and we can show that this path integral measure is invariant and all the gauge transformations generated by canonical constraints. And which means that it is invariant and the dynamical Beckmann-Comma group. And this Beckmann-Comma group actually is not a group, it's the collections of all the gauge transformations generated by the constraints. Because the constraints, because the constraint algebra is not a D algebra for general relativity, so the gauge the collection of gauge transformation don't form a group. And in general, it's only an interlocking algebra. And it have group structure only when equations of motion is imposed. Then this Beckmann-Kolmann group is really a group. It's equals to the space-time diffeomorphism group. But it is only special case for equations on the solution. But in general, because the path integral is sum over all the possible histories, so in general, this path integral measure is not invariant under at least the non-spatial diffeomorphisms, which means the non-spatial diffeomorphism symmetry is anomalous in this quantization. But it is the price to pay to consistent canonical theory, because there is actually no notion of local symmetry on the phase space corresponding to the non-spatial diffeomorphisms, which means that it is shown in the literature that you cannot find the generator on the phase space generating space-time, generating non-spatial diffeomorphisms as a canonical transformation, as a canonical symmetry. So then we see that all the gauge symmetries of the dynamic, all the dynamical gauge symmetries is implemented on this path integral, okay.
And in this case, what is the DLs? The square root of DL?
Okay, it is the Fadier-Bobov determinant. Standard Fadier-Bobov.
So is there a particular gauge fixing you're using?
Yes, here is the general, and some gauge fixing conditions.
So what, can you give an example of gauge fixing conditions that you like?
Well, it's not useful for practical calculation, this part, because it's too complicated.
No, but I just want to know in what range, can a gauge fixing condition.
Okay,
for example, it would seem that the gauge fixing condition can't depend on the omegas, but only depends on the e's or something.
Yes, but here I should assume that the gauge fixing condition only depends on the e's in order to write the path integral like this, because we should use some Hanau-Slapnov's trick to get rid of second-class constraint in the path integral. So it is the way necessarily have to be used to write the path integral like this. But to use that trick, it's only when only we have to assume that the gauge fixing condition only depend on E. Not depend on connection.
Okay, and I guess the question coming up is that this is, so tell me if I'm understanding the issue you're raising.
Mm-hmm.
This is a formal expression, it's just infinity equals infinity.
Yeah.
To make sense of it, one needs to impose a regularization. And
right,
the question
right.
is, after a regularization is imposed, is there still going to be the non-covariant terms in the spatial volume?
Or as in
perturbative quantum gravity, are those going to go away when you do a careful
job? I cannot, because the way I think for background independent quantization, for example, the natural regularization is a spinball model.
Mm-hmm.
But I cannot see it really goes away. I don't think it goes away, because you you basically regularize the path integral on a simplicial complex, for example, and with only finite number of vertices. But on each vertices, this guy is actually finite. So I don't see any reason. And the regularization, for example, dimensional regularization or the regularization in perturbative quantization, it's not motivated, it seems to me that. So I should rather implement this measure factor to the spinball mode. I will talk a bit later that the way to implement this local measure factor in the spinball mode.
But that's if you discretize that measure. But what if you just start from a discrete model, which is canonical, and then you just compute the measure?
Yes, of course.
In that case, they might not appear.
But
because
I worry about
these factors are really regularization dependent.
Yes, but I'm worried about in the end it won't be consistent with canonical theory.
No, I'm saying you regularize your canonical theory, and then you do the whole canonical analysis at this regularizer, but in the GI, what is this?
No, it cannot happen because I have seen that there's no local symmetry for diffeomorphism. Okay.
Yeah, but maybe I'm so. So there already is a glaring difference between the canonical theory and the spin foam models, which it seems to me is part of the myth. So I wonder what your attitude is. If that is, in the canonical theory, the Hamiltonian constraint just generates point to triangle moves, and in, if you put in the adjoint triangle to point moves, whereas in the spin foam models, you think about them as acting on spin network states, they also have exchange moves like two nodes go to three nodes
and
vice versa. So they're already completely different dynamically.
Right.
It would seem to me, so some people have for a long time had the attitude simply that the spin foam models are correct because they're more covariant, the canonical theory is just incorrect because you could argue that all the moves, that there's an argument from the Lorentz invariants that all the moves should be included.
Yes, yes.
So
I know. Yes.
Are you optimistic about that issue? Because if you're not optimistic about that issue, that is, why are you trying to make the measure factor agree when they don't agree about what the amplitudes are?
Yes, so the question I can answer in several levels. So in first level is that, so if I implement this measure factor to spin foam model, I will break the crossing symmetry. It is the first answer. The second answer is that if you forget about this local measure factor and get covariant spin foam model, what I can say is it's probably different quantization instead of canonical theory. So these two quantum theory probably cannot be equivalent to each other. Then the question is which one is preferred. Actually, it is what I don't know. I prefer the covariant one. But here, what I show here is that if I want to make the spin foam model consistent with this canonical theory, I have to break out this covariant.
So now I want to understand. Consistent with could mean two things. Consistent with could mean at the level of the kinematic states, that is, the spin foam model provides an evolution amplitude or projection operator that can be defined on the kinematically over space as the network space. Or that's a weaker sense or a stronger sense would be consistent with means equivalent with dynamic.
Yes, yes. Here I mean the equivalent of dynamics.
Right. So how do you expect to fix the first problem? Because the first problem has been there for 15 years and
is
more glaring than the issue of the measure.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a strategy to fix the first problem? The first problem is that the amplitudes are just different. The evolution amplitudes are different.
Okay, so
generated by the Hamiltonian constraint and by the spin foam.
No, I cannot fix this. I only can say they are not equivalent with that spin foam model, probably not equivalent with canonical theory.
Okay, so go ahead.
So it is my answer.
Yeah.
Yes. So there is another argument for this because we know that canonical theory is somehow we have full control on the quantization, and we know the axiom for this quantization. We can define the quantum algebra. We can find the representation. It's a well-defined rule to make quantization. But unfortunately, it is intrinsically have this problem, which is the non-spatial diffeomorphism is not a gauge symmetry on the phase space.
But it's much more serious problem. I mean, you may have full control of it, but it still could be wrong.
Yes, of course.
If you don't include all the amplitudes in the spin foam model, if you don't include all the dual proctor moves, then your evolution is highly non-ergodic on the space of states, and that seems really wrong. That is, if you start with one spin network, you stay within a very small class of spin networks generated by the triangle moves up to the spin network, and you don't evolve to most of the Hilbert space.
I see. Yes, it is a problem. Yes.
So therefore, there are constants of motion which are not constants of motion of general relativity.
Okay.
And therefore,
okay.
It's not a quantization of general relativity.
Okay, I see. Yes. I agree. It is some problem. But I mean, what I do here is try to find the relations.
Okay. Anyway, sorry. yes. Of your time. Though.
So we'll have questions.
But in fact, I still have a problem with the way you present the fact that you should break the invariances. If I remember correctly, the original paper about the Russian school, there's a way to derive this measure factor, which is as follows. You say, okay, if I go canonical, I have to do this splitting PQ, right? Mm-hmm. And this does break diffeomorphic symmetry. Now, if I want to reinstate diffeomorphic symmetry, I should just take the full measure and then put this extra factor. So the way you can, there's two ways to compute this, and it's perturbatively by doing the stuff. But it's also, there's another way to do it, which it was done in the 60s and 70s, where you say, I just want to impose diffeomorphic symmetry and compensate the breaking I'm doing in the DPDQ splitting with some extra factor. So whatever you're doing, it seems to me, and this is maybe the most, you know, if you take any regularization, this is the way sometimes you should think about this measure factor, that they are there to ensure that you never break diffeomorphic symmetry in the regularization. It's not the contrary. When you're representing it as they do break diffeomorphic symmetry, but in the original papers, that's not how it's derived.
Yes, what they are doing in the paper by Franklin, the Cosby is yes, I know. They try to use this measure factor to argue that they actually ensure that diffeomorphism covariates. But the problem is actually I understand is working, try to understand that things. But in the end, I will find out that what they are doing is something do a circle around. I do not mean they are. I mean their logic are circle around. They doing some circle around the problem. They doing something like so I transform the coordinates and we go back to the canonical theory. And so the way we want to answer the environment of the measure is that we try to transform and we impose the diffeomorphism transformation on the measure, and we transform the measure and try to get the equal of the two measure and the two coordinate system, say. And what they are doing is okay, they cannot check this. What they do is that I transform the measure and then go back to canonical theory. And so come back to canonical theory, they actually transform the action in terms of another coordinates, but they transform the action in another coordinate, they don't transform the field because they do some half transform, because you know that this action is the general covariant. If you transform the field and also transform the coordinates, and they won't change. But what they do, they transform the coordinate, they won't transform the field. So they get another action. And they get another action, they do the Hamiltonian analysis for another action, they get another measure. So they show that these two measures are actually the same.
But are you saying that in the paper some analyses can be improved? Or are you saying that the original idea, which is that in order to define the passing argument canonically, you have to break a symmetry, and then you have to this original idea that they are trying to, that they were pushing.
But
to break a symmetry, and then you're just trying to restore it. Are you saying that this idea is wrong, or that just...
Yeah, I cannot see these ideas from the detail. I just, we really try to understand very hard. We cannot understand, at least we cannot understand this idea from the detailed calculation.
Yeah, okay. We can do that. There's subsequent work after that, where... ensuring rod identity is the way.
Yes, they have some. They have
the way you fix the measure. It's not the other way around.
Yes, so. Okay. Yes, but we can talk about later. We really try to understand this for a long time, but finally we don't understand their way to it. So that's why I work through this, and I really try to transform this measure. And in the canonical level, and show that they are really invariant and all the gate transformations, but it is not diffeomorphic. So, okay, so here we see that all the dynamical symmetry is implemented, and so we come to two questions. So, first question is, can this reduced phase space pass integral this Pasinto formula gives the solutions to all the quantum constraints, which means that if all the dynamics, if the quantum dynamics is implemented in this past interval. And secondly, it's a practical question, how to remove these gate fixings in the practical computation. Because we know that in spin form model, these gate fixing conditions is hard to implement it. So we try to avoid it. So to answer the questions, we come to the relation between operator constraint quantization, reduced phase space quantization, and path integral. So here, what we're going to do is to write down the group library region region in the product with abelianized constraint. And on one side, we get the relation with reduced phase-based quantization. We show that they are integral equivalent. And secondly, we derive from this group library region to a path integral expression for the region map and region in the product, which answering both conceptual and practical questions, which means this path integral is solving all the quantum constraints, solving all the quantum constraints, and also this path integral remove all the gate fixing conditions.
Oh, what is the region in a product?
Oh, okay, so group library. I will give the definition. So here, before we answer the question, I first formulate the question in a more mathematical, rigorous manner. So we know that the constraint operator often have complicated forms, and which so that. The zero spectrum may be not only a pure point spectrum, but also continuum spectrum. So which means that the solution of the constraint equation may not lie in the kinematical Hilbert space, but rather lie in algebraic dual of a dense domain in the kinematical Hilbert space. And so what we are looking for is the state in the dual space, in the algebraic dual, such that solving the constraint in the dual sense. It is the true constraint equation we are going to use. And so we denote the space of solutions by D star physics. It is space of solutions. And the physical Hilbert space should be a subspace of the space of solutions. And so in the end, we should get this Diophant triple, a dense domain, can be topological embedded in the physical Hilbert space. And this physical Hilbert space can be topological embedded in the space of solutions. And a systematically construction of a physical Hilbert space can be done if we have an antilinear region map. And this antilinear region map is a map from a dense domain in the kinematical Hilbert space to the space of solutions. So which means that a given a kinematical space, I get a solution of the constraint. And such that this guy is a positive semi-definite sacred linear form on the dense domain. And if the quantum constraint is a quantum constraint algebra, it's a Lie algebra, then we can perform the group library region. And this guy is a candidate for the region map and space and the solution of the constraint. And then if it is the solution of the space, of the constraint, and we can define the physical inner product by this region inner product. And a null space can be defined by picking out the zero norm states. And the dense domain is defined by the solution space modulo the null space. And after the completion and the physical inner product, we get the physical Hilbert space. We can see that the central program for this procedure is to find such a region map, which solve all the quantum constraints. And we will show that the path integral we have is this region map, which solves all the constraints.
That integral is an infinite dimensional integral of the DMT, and
yes.
You're interested in cases where the group is not compact.
Yes.
So does one need also regularization procedures?
Yes, I will show the mathematical detail for to make sense of this.
In the DMT is in general not the Lebesgue measure. So what do you mean by DMT? Suppose it's
okay.
Finite dimensional and compact, and everything is fine.
Yes. Yes. DT here, because we are going to use abelianized constraint, it is the product of Lebesgue measure. And because, of course, there's the usual that there's infinite, maybe infinite number of constraints. So this guy is not a measure anymore, and we will have some prescription to solve this problem.
So if you check that, for instance, let's say, the simple example, it's when the Gauss law on a finite dimensional subspace.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, let's say, SU2. So the gate is just one copy of SU2. And in that case, we know that what we should get is just an integral over the gauge group with the R measure.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The L-measure is not the Lebesgue measure.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And, you know, so and you can you show for that example, for instance, that these two formula do agree? So we know, in that case, we know what is the projector, and it should be integral over the, you know, R-measure, and it's a compact integral.
Mm-hmm.
There's no
yes,
divergence. Whereas if you go to this Abelianos version, it seems that you're getting a trivial measure and infinite dimensional.
Yes, that, so that's his problem. I don't know. Look, I don't know this on that. Because because for Gauss constraints, it's very hard to abelianize. You abelianize, you get non-local expression. It will be an integral on the other side.
So you're saying that even for that case where we know what it means. Practically, so, which is a finite dimensional system, compact group, this procedure cannot be implemented.
It can be, maybe can be implemented, but it's technically very hard. So
and I check whether it agrees.
Yeah, I didn't. At least I didn't manage to check it. I didn't manage to check it.
I'm saying let's say I have like n vectors, and I take the sum of them being equal to zero. In R3, and this generates a SU2 group. So in that case, we know what is the ringing map. It's the integral of the R measure of the group action. And now, now you have three, I mean, it's a vector constraint.
Yes, for and what I mean is for Gauss constraint.
And in that case, we know what is the answer, and in that case, it sounds very surprising that you can use the answer
so
by
so that's hard to be
honest. Yeah, it's very hard to do. I mean, when we do.
Yeah.
When we do this with our abelianization business, we always try to avoid Gauss constraint. We only abelianize the diffeomorphism and the Hamiltonian constraint. We always avoid the.
But I mean, it's not, yeah, interesting one.
Yes, well,
I'm just saying, let's aside gravity, just take the simplest system
yes, it will be very hard, to check.
Do you agree that it should be done in a simple example to be sure that where is left? This is a system we control completely.
Yes, I know. Yes, I know. But because it's always very hard to be done, so because here the issue is first you first issue is abelianized. The second issue is anomaly. You can abelianize a constraint, mm-hmm. but when you quantize it, you're always in danger of anomaly.
Oh, but in the case I just described, I know there's no anomaly because if we do the group averaging with respect to SU2 group, you know, the abelian version, then.
No, but after abelianize the constraint, you only get abelian group.
Yeah, I know, but the question is whether these things is going to be equal to what we know is true.
Yes, so. Yes, because abelianized version of Gauss constraints is hard to implement because you need exponentiate, you need a self-adjoint.
You know that in principle it is equal to the.
I don't know. In principle, of course, it should equal, but I cannot prove it because it's a technical problem. I cannot prove it. So here is the. So here, the central problem is to find this ridging map.
Okay, so we see that all this procedure only works for constraint algebra, which is Lie algebra, but in general, it's not the case. There may be some structure function, but which have to use abelianization theorem, as I said, but state that all the first-class constraint algebra can be locally abelianized, and which means that we have equivalent constraint, which means we solve the momentums conjugate to the clock variable, and these constraints are abelianized. And so then, if we have self-adjoint operator and anomaly-free operator, we define the group averaging using abelianized constraint. Here, f prime are kinematical states, and here this denominator is the reference term. In order to cancel all divergences in the numerator. And so here, this eta omega is the candidate for the region map. Okay, before we answer the question using this eta omega, and we first relate the reduced phase quantization with the group averaging. Here, we can actually find a unitary map map on one side the physical state in reduced phase-based quantization to the physical state from group averaging. It is the unitary map, so we can actually identify the Hilbert space from reduced space from the group averaging with the physical Hilbert space from reduced phase-based quantization by this unitary map. And so because on this side, we have shown that there is a past integral formula for this physical inner product. So automatically, the group averaging gets a past integral formula. Another use for this unitary map is that we can define the direct observables on the group averaging Hilbert space. Because in this side, reduced phase space, we can easily define the direct observables by using relational framework. However, in group averaging side, it's very often quite hard to directly define the direct observables. But we can always use this pullback formula using this unitary map to pull back the direct observables from this side back to this side. So it is the equivalent. Then we come to the result path integral formula answering both conceptual and practical questions. So we can perform the standard skeletonization procedure for this group averaging physical inner product. And finally, we get a ratio of two path integral formulas. And here is the standard Liouville measure on the phase space. And here is the delta function of abelianized constraints, but there is no gate fixing condition anymore. And here is the exponential kinetic term. And instead of boundary physical state, we get boundary kinematical state. And we can show that this path integral formula formally solve all the quantum abelianized constraints, and which means we can prove this equation. And so this eta omega is qualified as a region map. So the conceptual question is answered. So on the other hand, the practical question is also answered because all the gauge fixing conditions are removed and the boundary states are kinematical states. And this path integral formula is ready for practical computation. And also, it is derived from canonical theory.
Can you explain the point
too? Okay, so this side? So because here, there's no, we derive from this, we make the skeletonization and put in resolution of identities, we derive from this guy to this path integral formula, and there's no gauge fixing condition. And also the boundary state are kinematical functions. Before, in the reduced phase-based side, we have gauge fixing conditions here, and the boundary state are physical state, gauge invariant, construct from direct observable.
So there's no gauge fixing because you're saying you have infinity divided by infinity?
Yes, yes. Actually here is the infinity divided out.
Are you sure that these two infinity do not depend on boundary states?
No, it's not dependent on boundary state. It's actually, it's not like a Fourier-Fourier trick, direct proof that it's divided out and canceled. It somehow circles around. On this side, it's the path integral. It equals the physical superstates from group averaging and also equals to the physical inner product of reduced phase-based quantization by the unitary map. And on that side, it's a gauge fixing. So what we prove is several is linked to this path integral to that path integral. So here we get this simpler path integral, and we apply this path integral to the case of gravity coupled to four scalar fields, and the four scalar fields is the clock variable, which is very convenient for us. And we can write down the diffeomorphism constraint, Hamiltonian constraint. And what we are going to do is to solve the momentum's conjugate to the clock variables, those PIs. And we write down what we need to consider is actually only the Jacobian matrix for to solve the constraint. And this Jacobian matrix, when the Jacobian matrix is non-degenerate, and we can abelianize constraint to have abelianized form. And so here, I should answer the question about the local things. So here, of course, we are doing only works locally because we need to assume the condition that the abelianites, the Jacobian matrix is non-degenerate. But we see that this Jacobian matrix is only depend on the matter field. So if we only care about the, of course, it is on the full phase space with gravity coupled matter, it's local. But if we're only interested in gravity, then we only cut out the matter degree of freedom. It is the trick. It's because that's why we call it it's convenient for coupling scalar field or Brown-Kukash dust. It's also the same. And so so we can plug in this abelianite constraint into the path integral formula one slide before. And we get this group error reaching physical inner product to be a ratio of two path integrals. And these two path integrals can be derived to have a covariant form. And here is some non-covariant measure factor. And here is the time gauge because we derived it from Ashoka Barbara Imi's Hamiltonian framework. And also because of that, we have to include both of the sectors of the simplicity constraint. And here we see that it is coupled both gravity with matter. And it displays a very complicated local matter in this term. So what we want to do is if we want, okay, so for example, if we want to do some simpler things. And of course, in principle, we should regularize this path integral to make sense this path integral and derive a spin form model for the coupled system. But if we want to do some simpler things, we could pick out the degree of the gravity degree of freedom from this path integral. The way to pick out the pure gravity degree of freedom is to make some approximation trick, so which is decouple the gravity and scalar, which we turn off the coupling by assume the coupling constant is small and negligible. And then it turns out that after this approximation, the scalar degree of freedom factor out from this path integral and canceled from denominator and numerator. And so in the end, we get, if we admit this, okay.
Excuse me, if you set alpha to zero, then the little h's are zero.
Because the realization
trick was to take
square. Yes, right.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So
yes.
So you're expanding around the place where there's no dynamics.
Right. No, I don't think it's no dynamics. So what I said is in principle, of course, one should not. It's not illegal to make such approximation. It's only approximation. It's not legal. In principle, of course, one should start with this path integral, and also not only scalar field, one should couple in principle all the quantum fields, the fermions, all the things to this path integral formula and derive spin form model for the whole field.
I understand your strategy.
Yes. But
I'm very much in favor of approximation methods, I'm not against it. So your strategy is to consider the case where
coupling very small
alpha and then alpha multiplies basically the gravitational part of the action.
Yeah.
So to consider the case where you're expanding around no gravitational dynamics, and then you're going to put it order by order in perturbation theory of gravitational dynamics.
No.
Not against it if that's what you're doing, but I want to understand.
No, what I mean is we couple in scalar field is just a trick to abelianite constraint. And we at very beginning we can assume that this alpha is very small. And we can still do the abelianization here. And it because I couple scalar field just for this mathematical trick. And in the end, because it is small and we approximate this path integral by remove the scalar degree of freedom. It is some hand-waving trick in order to pull out the gravity degree of freedom. So after pull out the gravity degree of freedom, I got a path integral without matter field and only left with this type of matter factor. Then, so from the pure gravity path integral, I can regularize to be a spin form model. And the question is how to implement the matter factor into spin form model. So I can briefly show you the idea to implement the measure factor. Can I use the least factor? Okay, so what we are going to start with is the generalized spinform Uric Lewandowski generalized spinform model, and so a typical thing is called the spinform trace, and which is an arbitrary valence vertex. It is this guy is called the spinform trace, and so it is actually essentially the BF vertex, the arbitrary valence generalization of BF vertex. And so what we are going to do is to couple source term into the BF action. So here's the B wedge F. We couple to a source. And then turns out that the vertex will change. There will be some internal structure for this spinform trace. It will get something like this. These lines are actually interdwiners, and there is some source internal structure inside. There's also something like this. So in addition to the boundary and the external boundary spin network, and there is also internal boundary spin network, which is the function of the source. When you turn off the source, and this internal structure will shrink a point, which is come back to the spinform trace. And so the measure factor is just the function of B. And because we couple B with the source, so the B are source derivatives. So we implement the measure factor by source derivatives. They only operating on internal structure, don't affect the external spin network. And it, for example, in space-time volume, we can implement by this way. And for spatial volume, it depends on foliation. So what we are going to do is we pick out epsilon ball for this in the neighborhood of this vertex. We call it B epsilon. And because it is an embedded spin bomb, and there is a foliation around it, which means that our space-time have a topological structure sigma p cross r. And so if we pick out an epsilon ball in the neighborhood of the vertex, we pick out a subfamily of the spatial slice, which is the sigma t, such that sigma t, the intersection with this epsilon ball is not empty set. So we pick out the subfamily of this spatial slice. And so we pick out, so we get a subfamily with intersections, and we pick out one slice, one spatial slice to the past or to the future of this vertex. And this spatial slice cuts the spin foam into a spin network with a boundary spin network. And so because there is a one-to-one isomorphic between the internal spin network to the external spin network. So it cuts, after this cut, we get external spin network. And by this isomorphism, we get the internal spin network. And we define this spatial volume to be the source derivative operating on the internal spin network. So this is the idea to implement the measure factor in spin bomb model. Okay.
I just asked a question about that last question.
Okay.
If normally when you couple the scalar field to gravity using inverse metric, isn't that a problem in the
bottom? Inverse metric?
Yeah.
Okay, this guy. Well, for example, if you do Plibanskis, you actually cannot couple the scalar field because the scalar field is always coupled with the triad. That's right. So if you working on host action using triad, then it always cannot down because the vertex is complicated.
So we don't like doing that in spin frames because you end up integrating.
No, here actually it's not degenerate. It's always not degenerate because the because as I said at the very beginning, this quantization only works for the regular system. Regular means that the Dirac undegenerate Dirac matrix degenerate, so we get rid of. Okay, so far for these simple models, so we come to the part with operator constraint quantization, master constraint quantization, and path integral quantization. So here is the logic of this section, and so we start with first class constraint with structure functions, and there's no group structure in general for the gate transformations, and we get group structure after we do abelianization. And we get abelian group for the gate transformations. And so we can, as we did before, we can do the group averaging to get the group averaging through the space. However, on the other hand, we can do another trick by introducing master constraints. Then we get one parameter group. For example, we can construct master constraint from the abelianized constraint by this formula. So we get another group averaging trick to get another group averaging tuple space. And we can show that these two tuple space are unitary equivalent. And on this side, we have shown that this Hilbert space from the abelianized group abelianized constraint group averaging is unitarily equivalent to the reduced space-based quantization. And on this side, because we have one single self-adjoint master constraint, we can do spectral decomposition for this master constraint, which is Dirac integral decomposition. And it is the only rigorous way in Dirac quantization to capture physical Hilbert space. So it is. So on this side, and also we can prove that the group averaging use master constraint is consistent with the Dirac integral decomposition. So we get the whole picture of the equivalence. On this side, it's a mathematical rigorous Dirac quantization using spectral decomposition. On this side, it's physically rigorous way to capture the physical, real physical degree of freedom. And because we have shown that on this side, we have have path integral formula consistent with physical inner product, so we got the whole equivalence relation between all the path integral, all the quantization procedures.
So here's a question even on the left-hand side, because it seems to contradict the statement of the Gibbs-Sternberg theorem, which is, if I go back to these things, which is this just simple mechanical system, which just wants you to constrain, then you can work out everything explicitly. You can work out the reduced quantization, and then you can work out the full quantization that is reducing after quantizing. And then what you can show is that means finite dimension system, so indeed, the two systems are isomorphic. That's the question of dimension. But this isomorphism is not a unitary isomorphism. And everything can be completely worked out.
So, is
so
it?
I think maybe when you say unitary equivalent, you mean isomorphic.
Because here there's always, we should subtract the reference vector.
Oh, even there, I mean, we have worked out the measure factor and we have worked out the just because these things is originally curved, there's certain things that do not factor out of the.
Is it using abelianized constraint?
We do the two.
So if it's not using abelianized constraint, it's different quantization, so it's not.
Maybe you should discuss after that. These statements gauge with respect to the same
string. Okay, so here I come a bit detail for proving those consistencies. So we have a bunch of abelianized constraints. They are implement normally free self-adjoint operators. And suppose the number of constraints is finite, and we can write down the group averaging formula by this. So it's very crucial that here is finite to write down this. And this group averaging we have shown that is equivalent to the relate to the reduced space-based quantization, physical inner product. And we can do another way with using master constraint defined by abelianized constraint. This K matrix is a positive definite constant matrix. And we quantize the master constraint to be positive self-joint operator, and we do another group averaging like this. Here, I should point out that here we put the epsilon regularization here, and I will show later the reason I put this epsilon regularization. And so it is expect that two prescriptions are consistent in certain sense. They should be equivalent under some condition, of course. So there are two cases. For finite number of constraints, we can direct show that under some technical assumption, they are equivalent. And for infinite number of constraints, we should design some limit in a certain way to obtain the consistency. So when the consistency is established, we get the group averaging of master constraint relates to the reduced space-based quantization via the abelianized constraint. So abelianized constraint is the bridge to relate those quantization procedures. So here we come to the finite number of constraints. So here is some mathematical assumption of the spectrum, which is not very strong because for simple system is checked or satisfied these conditions. So the group averaging group of space of these two approaches, it is for abelianized constraint, it is for master constraint, are unitarily equivalent to each other. It is for finite number of constraints. And for infinite number of constraints, the formula for abelianized constraint is not well defined because here is the product of Lebesgue measure, and when n goes to infinity, then this is not a measure anymore. And so, but for master constraint, although inside there's an infinite sum, if we can define a master constraint, then it is well defined because there's only one single constraint. Then the question is how to relate a well-defined thing to a ill-defined thing. The way to relate it is to define a truncated master constraint, to truncate the sum to a finite n. And suppose this truncated master constraint converges to the full master constraint via the strong resonant sense when n goes to infinity. And also, we assume some technical assumptions on this master constraint. And for any three states in a dense domain of kinematical superspace, there exist three sequences have the correct limit behavior. And such that, so we get the result that on this side, we calculate the group averaging in the product using finite number of abelianized constraints. And then we take the limit n goes to infinity, it recovers the group averaging using master constraint. So it is the consistency between group averaging using abelianized constraint and the master constraint. Okay.
And so it's hard for me to judge all the technical details like this, but I have a question I want to know how you address. So in a quantum field theory, I would have to regularize the CIs each individually.
Right.
And I would have to worry about the regularization of operator products and the extraction of convergences and also operator ordering issues. And then in the master constraint, which is the sum would be an integral, and I would also have additional divergences from the product of the two operators,
right,
as well
right.
as additional operator ordering difficulties.
Right.
So is the fine print of the theorem something like there exists an operator ordering and regularization procedure?
We don't consider that. We just assume. We just assume that yes, actually, essentially is finite dimensional problem, finite number of because it is the limit. We only worry about finite number of things.
Right. So supposing that I regulate on a lattice and turn an infinite problem into a finite problem,
and so
there's still going to be an infinite number of ways, assuming that the C's are individually regulated. Ways to regulate the product on lattice.
Yeah, so here, actually, these conditions care about this. So we assume that here it's only regularized finite number of constraints. And we assume that it converges in the strong resonance.
But converge as operators on a Hilbert space? Or
yeah. Yeah, and operate on the Hilbert space.
In strong
resonance.
What is that?
Strong resonance and equivalent, you can understand, you can exponential. you get self-joint operator and you exponential it, you get a bounded operator. And a strong resolvent equivalent to the exponential version converge, strongly converge.
So for example, if there were, supposing that this is a just an ordinary gauge field theory coupled to chiral fermion such that there's a chiral anomaly in the gauge currents, okay, then that chiral anomaly in the gauge currents will appear in the products of the Cs, and that will not be true. Because there will be no way to have the thing the limits converge. Am I understanding correctly?
For chiral fermions. It still can be true, I think.
Are you claiming that you can do something that nobody else can do, which is define a well-defined chiral gauge theory, a well-defined gauge theory with chiral anomalies and gauge currents?
I think that the anomaly, of course, is still there. It's still there. You just, I mean, using this master constraint trick, you get one single operator. That's the so first of all, the chiral symmetry. So it is only symmetry. It's not constraint operator.
Right. So anyway, let's discuss it. I just want to understand the level of the claim. So let's discuss this later.
Okay. All right. So we get the consistency. We get the relation between master constraint and reduced space-based quantization bridged by abelian noise constraint. But it only works for the master constraint construct from abelian noise constraint. But the question is, how about a general master constraint? The general master constraint, because we don't use, we construct the general master constraint without the abelian noise constraint, we lose the link with the reduced space-based quantization. But there is some other way to justify the group averaging, and there's another way to direct relate this group averaging to a path integral formula. The justification of the group averaging is using direct integral decomposition. So here we come to the general definition of the master constraint by this general shape. Ci, Cg, Cj are not abelianized constraints, but actually more conveniently the original constraint, because original constraint may have may very possibly have a polynomial structure. But after you do abelianization, of course you lose the you only can do it locally at first, and you also lose the polynomial structure. So if you want to do globally quantization and also do the polynomial operators, you should do the general master constraint. And also, this K matrix may also depend on the phase-based coordinates. And here, we only get one single constraint, so the constraint algebra is trivially a Lie algebra. And we can do the group averaging using the master constraint. For example, in loop quantum gravity or algebraic quantum gravity, this master constraint is defined by this. And it is Gauss constraint, diffeomorphism constraint, Hamiltonian constraint. And for this constraint, because we don't use abelianized constraint, we lose the link with reduced space-based quantization and reduced space-based path integral. But there is another way to justify the group averaging, and there is another way to derive directly from the group averaging to a path integral formula. So the way to justify this group averaging is using direct integral decomposition. So here we briefly review the direct integral decomposition. So we have a master constraint operator, which is self-adjoint positive. And we split the kinematic Hilbert space into three mutual orthogonal sectors with respect to the different spectral type, which is Hill-point spectrum, and absolutely continuous spectrum, and continuous singular spectrum. And for each sector, we make the direct integral decomposition, which is the spectral decomposition for the master constraint. And it is the integral of all the fiber Hilbert space, Hilbert spaces. And we pick out the fiber Hilbert space corresponding to lambda equals to 0. And we sum them over with respect to different spectral type, and they define the master, physical Hilbert space. And this definition for the physical Hilbert space is the most rigorous way to define the physical Hilbert space because it is less ambiguous. And also remark that in physical models, these continuous singular spectrums often absent. And this way, to define physical Hilbert space, although it's a good definition, but it is not practical. Like normal mathematical definition. It's not a practical way to determine the physical Hilbert space, especially for complicated system, because it requires the full knowledge of the spectrum of the operator. For a complicated operator, the spectrum often not known, like in loop quantum gravity. So the practical way to capture the physical inner product is the regularized group averaging, which we displayed before. And to write down this formula, we don't need any information of the spectrum, the operator spectrum. The reason to put epsilon here is in order to capture correctly a sector, a non-trivial sector of the physical, in a physical Hilbert space defined by direct integral decomposition. If there is no such epsilon, suppose we consider the case that zero spectrum of the operator is a pure point spectrum embedded in the continuum spectrum. Then, if we do the group averaging without epsilon, and two spectrum types will mix together, and in the end, you won't get the correct result. But if we put epsilon here and finally take epsilon goes to zero, and we finally capture correctly the absolute continuous sector in the physical Hilbert space from direct integral decomposition.
So you don't get the discrete spectrum?
No, we won't get that. But that part, in principle, one should solve the eigen equation. Because that part, the solution of the constraint is just lying in the kinematic Hilbert space. Mm-hmm. The non-trivial part is actually the absolute continuous sector of the physical Hilbert space. For example, in loop quantum gravity, the pure point sector is at least a lot of states can be obtained, which is the corresponding degenerate geometry. For example, the spin network with valence less than 4, 3 valence vertex, the degenerate geometry, which the volume operator had only had 0 spectrum for those spin network states. So what I said is actually the theorem here. And suppose we have some mathematical assumptions, which is not very strong, which satisfied by its all the simple physical models. And so we get the result that the group averaging Hilbert space is using master constraints unitarily equivalent to the absolute continuous sector of the physical Hilbert space. So here, this picture displays the reason we only captured the right result. Here, suppose it is the background of the continuum spectrum, and here is the pure point spectrum embedded in the continuum spectrum. And we basically group averaging here. Suppose without this epsilon, we group averaging here, the two spectrum mix up. So if we group averaging here, we capture correctly the continuum spectrum, then we take the limit back to zero. So we capture correctly that's the reason why we capture correctly the absolute continuous spectrum. And all the conditions in the theorem are satisfied all the physical model simpler, the physical model simpler than GR in the literature. Okay, so here we come to the path integral derived from this master constraint operator. So here we first write down this master constraint operator for loop quantum gravity or algebraic quantum gravity. And it is the list of the formula which contribute to the components. And this master constraint operator have correct semi-classical limit. So it is the correct operator to be used.
What do you mean? Then it is therefore the correct
operator. Because
the theorem is that does the correct semi-classical limit, you also take the continuum limit?
Well, you can define the semi-classical limit in that way. So you suppose you have algebraic lattice, you're talking about the semi-classical limit only when the lattice embedded into the continuum, embedded into the manifold, and such that all the lattice variables get the physical interpretation. And such the physical interpretation is that the holonomy on the lattice edge is the holonomy of the field, of the connection field. And so what you can check, because you're working on the lattice, which is a discrete setting, what you can check, the only semi-classical limit you can check is that the semi-classical limit of the lattice variable. So which means that it is what you can do here, plug in.
But there's an infinite number of different lattice Hamiltonian
right now. Yes, so
when you say it is decorrect, it's just
that. Yes, that's the that's the problem of this. So there are several levels. So first level, you define the semi-classical limit using the expectation value of the semi-classical state, and the semi-classical state only can be defined to be graph dependent, because the kinematical Hilbert space of Lupton gravity is non-separable Hilbert space, and the complexifier technique is essentially fail, and it works only when you fix the graph, which means you define the cutoff state. And so here, that's the essential reason that you only can capture the lattice variables. And the question is how to capture the continuum variables. And because of this non-separability of the Hilbert space, and you can capture the continuum variables only when you make some lattice refinement. Only when you make the lattice refinement, you only can approximate the phase space point arbitrary value, but you cannot get one single. You always have resolution. That's essentially the reason.
The question was that there would be an infinite number of Hamiltonian region right now that will satisfy all the criteria that you just stated.
Yes, 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 right, of course, yes, yes. Yeah, I mean.
When you're saying this is the.
Yes, yes, right, agree. So, so you have a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So here, because we are going to use coherent state path integral, so we review a bit the definition of complexifier coherent state. So so on one edge we define the complexifier, and we use the heat kernel evolution of the delta distribution, and we get the complexifier coherent state. And this coherent state have over completeness relation, which is very important for us. And with respect to the Lugo measure on the cotangent bundle of the group. And it is for one edge. On the graph, the coherent state is just the product over all the individual coherent state on edges. And this coherent state displays good semi-classical properties for polynomial operators, polynomial of holonomy operator, and flux operator. The expectation value display correct semi-classical limit. And for non-polynomial operators, at least on cubic graph, you check the volume operator and the master constraint operator. It have good semi-classical limit. Here is a classical expression of volume and classical expression of master constraint operator. Those relations are important for us to derive path integral. And here we make the standard skeletonization procedure for this matrix element. So we write down it is the group averaging formula, and we do the group the approximation in the resolution of identity with respect to the coherence state, which is over completeness relation. And so we get this formula, and for each single step, we use the semi-classical property of the coherent state and master constraint operator. So we get this formula. It is the classical expression of master constraint, and here is the fluctuation. And here, we call it the overlap function, which will give the kinetic term of the action. So we define the theta variables for each holonomy, and we can directly arrive a path integral formula for the matrix element. It is the path integral formula, and here is the kinetic term from the overlap function. Here is the master constraint, the classical master constraint, and the fluctuation. And here actually, and this master constraint and this fluctuation display a highly interacting, very complicated interaction between the vertices. And so it might be interesting to derive a hypercubic spinform model from this path integral. And so in order to have here we already have the path integral formula. So in order to relate the things on the exponential to the classical action, so we will ignore some quantum corrections to get the classical action on the exponential. So first thing we should do is we ignore the fluctuations. So actually, it is the assumption, non-trivial assumption for the operator ordering in the master constraint. For example, for simple system like quantum field theory, such an operator ordering is just a normal ordering. Then this fluctuation just disappear. It's just a standard coherent state past integral. And also, we also ignore the second order term on the exponential, and because it comes from the overlap function, and the overlap function sharply peak at the spacetime of the phase space point with y is square root of t. T is proportional to h bar, and so this second order term is proportional to first order of t. So it is a quantum correction on the exponential. So if we ignore those quantum corrections, we get the classical action on the exponential, which is the canonical action, and it's a kinetic term, and it's a linear combination of the constraint. And so here it is the path integral measure, and it is the Lugo measure of the cotangent bundle of group. And here this guy is the local measure because of the K, the phase space dependence of the K matrix from the
To me, because I'm not so interested in all the depths and so on. The only interesting thing for me is how you go from the master constraint to the thing that's the linear combination of the constraints. So that must be just a simple algebra.
Yeah, it's not. It's the transformation of delta function.
Meaning?
So.
Well, if
we're
close to the end, maybe we can just go ahead and
Yeah. Okay, so just finish.
So that's just okay. Go ahead.
Okay, so here because we're starting from the discrete setting, so finally we get a hypercube discrete path integral, and this path integral because it's defined on cubulation, so it is mathematically well defined quantity. Everything here is mathematically well defined.
Yeah, I missed the point because usually, it's not only discrete on space, but you also have discreteness on time.
Yeah, because here so it's actually because we only assume finite number of steps.
But then you can't take the limit and neglect the terms you're neglecting.
Yeah, if we take the limit, it won't get well defined. I mean, because we do the calculation only for finite, and then we take the limit,
yeah,
and goes infinity.
But usually, you can neglect the second order term because.
But
small.
Here, I.
Right?
Yes.
Small because you take.
Yes, but. Yes.
I don't know if you do finite,
but he's
only
neglecting
because
he wants to
do
the classical thing, not because. He's neglecting it not because normally you neglect it because there's zero, but you're still quantum, but you neglect them.
Yeah, but then you don't get an equality, you just get.
Yeah, it's approximation. Of course, in normal, so here something needs to be clarified. So in normal quantum field theory, quantum mechanics, you often ignore the second order thing, right?
But again, that's because you take the limit.
Yeah, because it takes the limit. Yes, but actually, I mean, mathematically speaking, it's not illegal. It's not legal because in the end, the Feynman-Katz formula. Won't capture the continuum path, continuous path. It is only some kind of Hoeder continuous, piecewise continuous, something like that. So that is only illegal thing, but in the end you get the correct result. But here I also worried about it, so I didn't make the statement that we, because the limit, I ignore the second order things, but I say, what I say is if we want to recover, in principle, of course, one should have this here to further calculation. But if we want to get action principle on the exponential, I have to ignore the second, the h-bar corrections. So these are actually h-bar corrections. So if this h-bar corrections appears on the exponential, we won't get the classical action, right? So. Okay. So that's why I make this.
Then on the next slide, you don't get an equality.
Yeah, it's not equality in general.
You have one thing and then
you're
discretizing the other one.
Right. So.
That's when something.
Right. So here, what we show is the existence. There exists a path integral formula corresponding to the canonical formulation. So, although in the end it's not very beautiful, but there exists some path integral formula.
You're defining it. Not sure what's the starting point and what's the end point.
The starting point is the group averaging using master constraint. And so we derive a path integral formula.
Then you're replacing that.
Yeah, I would
complete by something else, which is in the form you like.
Yes.
By definition, it is.
By definition, of course, that's why I say in principle one should not use this, but the one before.
Mm-hmm.
Here we just change the starting point, like ordinary actually ordinary path integral formula. So here so because of the discreteness, everything here is well defined quantity, and the pair. N and gamma, N is step number, and gamma is the graph we underline the calculation, labels the triangulation dependence of the path integral formula. So here, in contrast to the reduced space-based quantization procedure, this approach suggests a more direct link from canonical loop quantum gravity to a well-defined path integral formula. Hopefully, we can derive a spinform model from this. So then we summarize that outlook. So here we consider the relation between reduced space-based quantization, operator constraint quantization, and master constraint quantization. And the relation suggests a direct link relating canonical framework to a path integral formulation for a general constraint system. So here I should answer the question about locality of this abelianization and quantization. So here, we're using abelianized constraint only to make the bridge. So here, what we are discussing is the bridge between the different quantizations. So this bridge only exists, can exist at least only when locally. So we locally quantize the system by this abelianization. We only capture the local information on the phase space. But when we capture the local information on the phase space, we get the relation between different quantization procedures. Of course, if one wants to capture full phase space, one should pass through the general master constraint, and then we lose the relation between different quantization procedures. But it is well-defined quantization, but it's different quantization procedure. Another good thing is that if we, as we have seen, recover to matter field, then because the Jacobian is only depend on the matter degree of freedom, so the phase space we cut out away is only depend on the matter degree of freedom. So if we only consider gravity degree of freedom, so we still capture full degree of freedom for gravity. So it is the argument for this. So here actually what we are doing is two different procedures. So one procedure is to do reduced space-based quantization, operator constraint quantization. We get a formal path integral on the continuum. And what we do is we choose the triangulation and we get a certain spinform model. Because we derive from canonical physical inner product, this spinform model is a physical inner product. And another way is from canonical non-graph changing master constraint quantization. We derive directly a path integral formulation for the physical inner product, and which is mathematically well-defined quantity automatically. And also the analysis for this spinball model is still still a research in progress because it's quite complicated inside. And also a graph changing master constraint quantization might hopefully relate canonical loop quantum gravity with a certain group field theory directly. And evidence is that because both theories are triangulation independent, and also both theories describe interactions between spinet vertices. And because the canonical loop quantum gravity is the background it's a special case for non-abelian gauge theory. So hopefully the relation between non-abelian gauge theory and group field theory might be universal. So that's it. Thanks.
So you still want to ask questions? We're raising your hand?
Yeah.
Just a bit of a short question.
On your last slide, you said relate canonical loop quantum gravity to
GFT. Yeah, this is seen in progress.
Topology change?
Yes, with topology change. Yeah, because in canonical theory we have the topology change also.
Okay.
Yes.
What do you mean?
Yeah, so suppose you have of course more general thing is using loop quantum gravity arbitrary valence and using Ashkala-Mondovsky measure, and you define graph changing master constraint and change the graph in whatever shape you have.
Mm-hmm.
And also, even in algebraic quantum gravity, you have a lattice, you fix a lattice, but your master constraint can create from. So suppose you originally have some graph, and other places are empty, trivial edges, and so the graph, the non-graph changing master constraint can change the trivial edge to be a non-trivial edge. So in the end, you have evolution from a trivial graph like this and to be some other trivial graph like this. So which means you have some topology at the very beginning and you have different topology. It's possible to have different topology, which is
topology of the graph.
Yeah, of the non-trivial graph.
Okay.
So it's something in progress. So I will explain it to you later. Yesterday, I explained a bit to Florian. We are discussing a little bit.
Okay, then let's finish here. Thanks, Mahi.